I got to get right into this. Kevin Ioli is my guest. Kevin, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, good. So, Kevin, you and I spoke 3 months ago after Israel Adesanya lost in his attempt to move up to light heavyweight. He was back in the cage on Saturday. Let's start right there. What were you looking to see from him going into that fight, and then how did he show out to you?
Well, you know, I grade him as an A because what we were looking to see was, could he improve his takedown defense? I mean, the Achilles heel he had in that fight against Jan Blachowicz was the fact that he couldn't get up when he got taken down, or couldn't prevent takedowns in the first place. He was fighting a guy that had a wrestling-heavy style in Marvin Vettori, and that was going to be the question in this fight. If Vettori was going to win the fight, or more appropriately, I guess, if Adesanya was going to lose it, it was going to be the fact that he got put on his back repeatedly in the fight. And while he got taken down a couple of times, when he did get taken down, he got up very quickly, unlike when Jan Blachowicz had him down. That allowed his striking to take over. And so, I, as I say, I grade him an A. I think he did a really, really good job in terms of shoring up what was a glaring weakness. And I think still would be listed as the weakness of his game, but certainly it's not as bad today as it was the Monday after the fight in February.
No doubt. I agree. Kevin Ioli is joining us. So I'm going to jump around a little bit here, Kevin, but Brandon Moreno became the first Mexican-born champion in UFC history with his win on Saturday. Obviously, that's a huge win for him, but when you consider the fact that he is now the first Mexican-born champion, what does that mean for the entire sport?
I think that is so huge for the sport because, number one, the Mexican people love the fight game. And having one of their own now being a UFC champion is just going to help in so many ways. You know, one thing it's going to do is it's going to make some kids who would have otherwise gone into boxing consider MMA and go into MMA. It's going to raise the level of talent in that country, which will then raise the level of interest in it. And I think now this makes them, when they go to Mexico, you know, they can put a championship fight on with somebody from their own country. The other thing from the UFC standpoint, if you look at it, Jim, you know, they have had trouble getting the flyweight division to take off. They had Demetrius Johnson, you know, arguably the greatest champion at the time. He was such a tremendous fighter as the flyweight champion. It just did not, almost folded the division. Now they have somebody who, in Mexico, they like those lighter weight fighters, where in the U.S. we tend to like the bigger weight fighters. So now, all of a sudden, you know, it's going to benefit in the U.S. as well, because it'll allow the development of the flyweight division. They might get more and better talent overall in the division because it's getting attention from where the champion's from. So I think there's so many benefits to it.
Right, and he's got tremendous heart. He's got a great personality, which brings me to my next thing. Leon Edwards beat Nate Diaz. Kevin, I know you spoke to Nate before the fight. I spoke to Nate before the fight. You've been around the combat game a long, long time. How would you explain the absolute love and affection that the fans have for Nate Diaz?
Well, I think it was explained in the fifth round when he did what he did. Lands a slap, you want to say in jab, but he slaps Leon Edwards in the face, comes back with a straight left hand, and almost puts him down. You know, Diaz had blood from, what, 3 or 4 cuts on his head. His leg was just kicked to death. He could barely walk, was limping. And he never gave up. He just kept coming, and he tried to find a way to win. And, you know, he is, as the fans say, he is so real. He is what he is. I mean, there's no pretense for him. And I did a story, and I had an anecdote, and it was about his brother, Nick, but I think this is why both of them are so popular. And Nick had been out of the game for about 3 years at this time this happened, Jim. And Hunter Campbell, the UFC's chief business officer, gets a call from Nick. And Hunter is the guy that a lot of times makes the fights and starts to negotiate the deals with the fighters. And Nick says, hey, I want to come back and fight. And Hunter says, great, who do you want to fight? And he says, well, I want to fight Daniel Cormier. And he said, well, you know that you're a welterweight and Daniel Cormier is a heavyweight. And Nick says, but I'm a G. That's what I do. And, you know, I think that kind of really summarizes why both Diaz brothers are so popular. They don't care who it is. They will literally fight anybody at any time.
It's incredible. But what about Nick then? To your point, Kevin, now it's been 6.5 years since he's fought, and everybody wants to know, are you going to fight? And there's been some rumblings. Can you see him fighting this year?
I personally find it hard to believe. You know, you look at 6.5 years and the game has changed so much. The quality has changed. And how good can he be 6.5 years in? If he didn't do it any of those times when he had opportunities, why would he do it now? But Dana White said, and it looks the way it's going that he may do it. So, you know, with Nick Diaz, until he actually makes the walk and steps into the cage, I'll never believe it. But, you know, it's looking a little better now than it did any time, I think, in the previous 6.5 years.
So, Kevin, what about Nate? Man, again, I love Nate so much, but where does this leave Nate? He's made it pretty clear he's not going to fight just a fight or just fight anybody, but he says he wants to fight again. What would be the next most likely fight for Nate?
To me, the fight that makes the most sense would be Conor McGregor. Win or lose against Dustin Poirier, that's July 10th in Las Vegas. UFC 264. I think that's the fight that makes sense. You know, they're both going to be on a very similar schedule. They've split a series 1-1. They're arch rivals. I think that is the fight that makes the most sense. I certainly think there's other ways that they can go, and the fact that Nate can move up and down in different weight classes would make a difference too. You know, I think that they could look at somebody like a Tony Ferguson, you know, going back to fight him. I mean, that would be a crazy fight if they could pull that off. But I think Conor McGregor, Jim, is the fight that makes the most sense, and is the one that the UFC would look to put on, regardless of what Conor does with Dustin in that trilogy fight on July 10th.
All right, so Kevin, I got to know, because of who you are and what you represent in this industry and that you've covered both MMA and boxing for a long, long time, more and more fights between YouTubers and YouTubers and YouTubers and MMA guys and YouTubers and TikTokers. What do you make of all this?
You know, it's a good way for guys to make money, but I don't think it's doing the sport any favor, right? I don't think it's hurting it. It's not, you know, tearing the sports apart. But certainly, you know, we don't see, you know, YouTubers jump into an NBA game and play in the NBA finals, right? We just don't see that happening. And I don't understand why, you know, what people's interest in this are. Of course, you know, these guys, you know, are popular, but they're not professional fighters, you know. And so I think it's going to, the course is going to, you know, wane here fairly soon, because really, to me, the only people that are, you know, fans of this are the people that are fans of the specific YouTube or TikTok stars. And I think eventually that, you know, like if Jake Paul beats Tyron Woodley, I think, okay, he's proven his point. You know, he can box a little bit. UFC fighters aren't boxers. Let's move on. And if he doesn't fight boxers, I think that, you know, it'll just kind of drip away. I'm happy that, you know, somebody like Floyd Mayweather can make money off it, or any of the guys, you know, Woodley, whatever he's making. But I just don't think it's anything that real serious fans care too much about.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I tend to see it the same way, but then a part of me is like, hey, Jay, and I'm not here to be critical of Jake Paul. I mean, it's brilliant what he's doing.
Of course.
But, I mean, why not take a shot at Nate while you're at it, Jake? You think he wants any part of Nate Diaz?
No, not a chance. I mean,
not a chance,
know,
right?
Hey, look, any fighter that's in his prime, it's a real fighter. I mean, you know, hey, I think Jake has some talent as a boxer.
I do too.
I really do. But, you know, if he were a boxer right now, he would be fighting guys that, you know, are very low on the totem pole in the boxing world. So, you know, the fact what he's doing is he spun it, and he's going in and fighting, you know, retired UFC fighters and over-the-hill UFC fighters to make a lot of money, where he wouldn't be making that kind of money fighting the boxers that he's so brilliant on his part. But yeah, I don't think it's there's much there.
No, it's brilliant. It's brilliant on his part, but I don't think he wants any part of Nate Diaz at all.
No.
He covers MMA and boxing for Yahoo Sports. He is a legend of that game. Good friend of the program. Kevin, great to have you back. Thank you very much for that.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it, bro. See ya.
Good job, Kevin, as always.